Hugh, once again, thank you so much for availing yourself to have this conversation with us this afternoon. I know a lot of people have been going crazy since I put it on the socials that somebody from the CCMA is going to be talking to us this afternoon. Everybody said, I have a question. I want to ask this. I'm going through this. Or somebody I know is going through something. But first, before we start off our conversation, maybe give us an a full description. What does CCMA stand for?
All right. The CCMA stands for the Conciliation for, the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration.
Say that again. The network was breaking up?
The Commission.
Commission?
For Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration.
Oh, okay. I get it. I also didn't know. I looked it up, I must say, before I spoke to you. Because we only just hear CCMA and we say, if you are ill-treated at work, these are the people that you need to contact. But this is not all that the CCMA does, right? Or what it's all, entirely all about. Give us a background. Who is the CCMA and what do you do?
All right. The CCMA is a dispute resolution tribunal that was established in terms of the Labor Relations Act in 1995. Broadly, our work involves dealing with individual labor disputes and collective labor disputes. For individual labor disputes, we would be dealing with your dismissal type of disputes, your unfair labor practices, your unfair discrimination disputes, and some disputes that relate to the situation where you may have temporary employment services not complying with the provisions under the section that regulate that people cannot be employed indefinitely without a valid reason, amongst others. It's quite a lot, but just at a broader level in terms of what the majority of our case, load involves. Those are the majority of the cases that we deal with. And then in addition as well, we were given the jurisdiction to also deal with disputes relating to outstanding pay under the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, amongst others. Yeah. And then on a collective bargaining basis, it's those disputes between unions and employers whenever there's wage negotiations, and then thereafter maybe industrial action. That's where we intervene as well.
So then what happens if I'm a domestic worker, we do not have a contract, and then comes a time where my employer now can no longer afford my services, right? And they just say, unfortunately, no, Luthando, we have to let you go. Thank you for your time. I mean, they do give me, say, a month's notice to say this will be your month, your last month of work. Do you then also step in such situations where I may not have been registered in Kwaleba, you know, so there's nothing for me there? Do you also step in such situations?
Okay. The first principle to clarify is that in terms of the law, there's no requirement for a written contract when it comes to employment law.
Okay.
So as long as there's an agreement between yourself and the person that you're rendering services to, that you're going to render services, and that person is going to pay you in return for those services, then the employment contract would come into being. There's no requirement for it to be in writing.
Oh.
And then, in the event that as an employer you realize that you cannot afford those services anymore for financial reasons or whatever, the law requires you to notify your employee on time that you have you have certain challenges, and you specify what those challenges are, whether it be financial, whether it be due to changes, maybe you need to relocate. You must notify the employee in writing that these are me as an employer, and then as a result of that, I need to consult you, I need to have a discussion with you regarding the things that are affecting me, that are causing me to contemplate retrenching you. I'm just dealing with this on as simplistically as I can, mm-hmm. to the example that you made of a domestic worker.
Uh-huh.
So in that context, then the employer would have to explain to the domestic worker as to what is happening to them as an employer that is causing them to initiate the discussion around retrenchment. And then they must give the worker the opportunity to give their own input,
mm-hmm.
To what are the alternative ways that you can deal with the situation to possibly avoid their dismissal. Because due to the high unemployment rate, the priority is always priority is always on looking at the things that we can do as a society to avoid people being dismissed.
Yes.
So that is, it's important that that discussion happens. And then in that discussion, it's to discuss those reasons behind why you're initiating the conversation. It's to discuss what are the ways that we can avoid your dismissal, if we can avoid it. It's to discuss if we can avoid your dismissal, because probably it will only be that one domestic worker, then can I change the timing of that dismissal so that I can give you more time to try and make alternative arrangements after confirmation of the dismissal? And then you also need to have a discussion around what is the severance pay that you're going to pay me once I'm dismissed, amongst others. And insofar as the severance pay is concerned, the law states that a worker is entitled to 1 week for every completed year of service, if ever an employer intends dismissing that worker for operational requirements. However, if ever it happens that the person maybe offers you a reasonable alternative, to use this example, maybe I know somebody next door who needs the services of a domestic worker, then we make an arrangement that, you know what, I can't afford the services of Mrs. So-and-so anymore. Can I bring her to you so that she can work for you? That could be regarded as a reasonable alternative that I facilitated, even if I'm not the one who's offering the employment. So depending on what the circumstances are, if there's a refusal, and that refusal, you're refusing a reasonable alternative, then you may not be entitled to severance pay. But should there be a dispute about whether you refused alternative employment or not, then that's where the CCMA will come in again through the provision of Section 41 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, where you bring the dispute to us, we check what is going on, and then in an arbitration, if conciliation fails, in an arbitration, we then determine whether what you refused, the alternative employment, whether it was a reasonable alternative. And just to mention, in the example that I made, chances are it would be considered a reasonable alternative because you're still working within the same location.
Mm-hmm.
However, maybe if the pay is too low in terms of what the alternative employer may offer you, we would also take that into account as to whether reasonably can a person be expected to accept that type of pay. But the other thing to note is that, remember, we have a national minimum wage.
Yes.
That is how much a person must be paid per hour.
Mm-hmm.
And the current rate, if I'm not mistaken, is that around, I think, 25 rand 90 cents per hour.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all the considerations that we take into place. But what is important for employers to understand is that they need to comply with the National Minimum Wage Act as well.
Hey, now we know why people always run to the CCMA, because like the way in which you are describing and, you know, giving us an understanding of what it is that happens. So how then do I go about, you know, reporting, bringing forward a case? I don't know if, do we call it reporting an employer?
We call it referral.
A referral. Okay. How do I go about referring then my case to the CCMA? Should I have something that I need to refer? Friends, you are also welcome to join in in on the conversation, 073-470-3520. If you've ever referred a case to the CCMA, we'd also love to hear from you. On the line with us, we're talking to Acting Senior National Commissioner, Ms. Boitumelo Mokoena from the CCMA. How do I go about? What is the process of referring a case?
Okay. The first thing to note is that in terms of the law, a dismissed person has 30 days to bring their case to the CCMA.
Okay.
So from the date on which you dismissed, you have 30 days to refer the matter if you believe that your dismissal was unfair, whether for the reason or procedurally.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, in terms of the how, we have offices all over the country,
mm-hmm.
depending on where you're based. But we don't only provide for the physical bringing of the referral. We have emails where you can send the referral via email.
Mm-hmm.
We have our online platforms, our apps that you can use to refer the matter. Yes.
Oh, okay. See, it's made easier. CCMA is moving along with the times. Email, apps are available. You can also walk in if you do not have these at your disposal. We know that data is expensive and sometimes you choose to walk into the center. So, so after 30 days, you cannot do anything for me?
After 30 days, we would consider it as a late referral.
Uh-huh.
However, it doesn't mean that we're going to turn you away.
Okay.
It means that we will still process that referral. But then you will alert you that your referral is late, and then there's a form that we would require you to fill out where you would be required to indicate, amongst all your other details, to indicate why you were late, why you believe your case can succeed,
mm-hmm.
and what prejudice you would suffer if ever we don't grant condonation. So our agreeing to proceed with your matter as far as conciliation or up to the point of conciliation, we call it condonation. So we can either grant the condonation or deny it, meaning that we either accept, amongst other things, the reason that you put forward for being late
mm-hmm.
as reasonable, and then we assess whether you have reasonable prospects of succeeding with your case, and we assess the prejudice factor as well. And then it's also important to note that the person that you're referring the matter against also has a right to respond to that condonation application. It either we may ask you to do it at referral stage,
mm-hmm.
where you fill out that form and you submit it together with your form, or if it happens that the issue gets raised in our process, then a commissioner would be in a position to deal with the issue right there in the process, in the hearing.
Oh, okay. So there is no time period then for the late referral. I can be 5 years late and still come to the offices?
Yeah, you could be 5 years late, but the problem is the degree of lateness, and you're reminding me of a factor that I skipped.
Okay.
We also consider the degree of lateness. So let's say, for argument's sake, if somebody is late by 5 days, it's not an excessive lateness. It's just like we take that into account amongst the other things that I mentioned. Obviously, 5 years is quite a long period, so there really would have to be seriously compelling reasons for us to agree that we then process your matter all the way.
Oh, okay. I hear you 100%. I hear you 100%, Commissioner. Now, there is another side of this that we often find as employees, right?
Uh-huh.
We have issues with our employers. Then we say we are dismissed and we feel that this was unfair. We take them to the CCMA and we win the case. Do we call it winning? I want to use the correct terms. Do I say I win the case?
You would have been successful.
Okay.
In your matter.
My matter has been successful, and I say I enjoy my work. You know, I love what I do. I had no intentions of leaving my work. I still want to continue working for Company A. And the employer fine retains me after that, but then I find myself being victimized in my job. What then do I do?
Okay. If you find yourself victimized after
referring,
you would have to be specific about the type of victimization that you experience at your work.
Okay.
Because when you refer it to us, we would have to link it to a type of dispute. Let's say, for example, it's for you, it comes across as victimization, and maybe let's say the employer denies you benefits that they give to other employees, then you may have the opportunity of referring that matter as an unfair labor practice relating to benefits, even though the underlying reason would be that you've been victimized because of having sent that employer to the CCMA previously. Or you may also find that there's discrimination issues that arise there. Maybe you harassed at work, it's a form of victimization. If you harassed, then you may also place it in terms of the unfair discrimination dispute.
Okay, there is a process to follow for everything. We do not just say, I'm being victimized, and we do not look into it. They also need, I want to believe there must be some sort of evidence as well, right?
Yes, definitely,
because we cannot blame, because sometimes it's not always that the employers are wrong. Hey, sometimes we are in the wrong and we're just trying to get away with murder, for lack of a better word.
Yeah,
30 minutes past 2 o'clock, we're talking to Acting National Senior Commissioner from the CCMA this afternoon here on Faith Out Loud. Now, having given my example earlier on, there was actually a message that has been sent. I just need to find it. And it's actually in line with the example I had given earlier on, right? There's another one that's just come in. This lady, she says, my mom worked as a domestic worker for 17 years. When COVID started in 2020, she went to labor only to find out that she is not registered, of which the employer lied to her and said she is registered. Then I tried to call her, the employer asking her to register my mom. She was like, yeah, I'll fix everything. Your mom must go to labor. Then she said, I'll go to labor. Okay, after a week, she called my mom to come back to work because the house was dirty. Obviously, it's 3 weeks engasebenzi since it was locked down. She went, she worked, she got paid, and end of that month. Then after, she just sent an email to me that my mom, she doesn't have a job anymore because she is now old. She didn't give her a cent. Imagine 17 years working, umkhulisele nomntanakhe, but she only got paid imali for the month. Nakhona, she was underpaying her. She was giving her 3.2, if I'm not mistaken. I would like to be assisted on how can she get help since she didn't get anything after 17 years and she now got arthritis. I want that woman to pay at least something to my mom, to be fair. So we want to know which steps to take.
There's a whole range of issues that are coming up with that inquiry. The first one is the UIF situation, because they're indicating that the listener's mom was not registered by the employer, the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor has a role to ensure that employers comply with the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. So once that matter is reported to the Department of Labor, the Department of Labor is required to take steps and check with this employer as to why they have not complied, and issue an order to get them to comply with the law, because no one has a choice. As long as you're an employer, there are certain things that you must comply with in terms of the law, especially with the issues that relate to the Department of Labor, with this UIF issue being an example. And then the issue of retirement age. Generally, the case law states that the employer doesn't have the automatic right to dismiss somebody by virtue of the fact that they've reached retirement age.
Okay.
There has to be a policy that regulates those circumstances. In as much as the law would indicate what age a person may go to pension, it doesn't automatically feed into the workplace, in that the person would have to be automatically terminated. There has to be a policy that regulates that. But it is understandable in this example that we're talking about your domestic employers. So in your house, you're not necessarily going to have a policy. It may assist to have those types of discussions ahead and have an agreement and an understanding that, Mama, when you get to this age, we need to have a discussion, need to assess whether you can still render your services effectively to me, because we are human beings and we age differently.
Mm-hmm.
So the guidance that is provided there for domestic employers is that have these discussions ahead so that you prepare the workers so that they go ahead as to when I get to this age, when I get to this state, then there's this discussion coming up with my employer where we need to discuss as to whether it is still viable to continue with that relationship or not. But if there's no agreement, obviously, and the dismissal happens and it didn't comply with any procedures,
mm-hmm.
then that worker would still have the opportunity or the right to refer the matter to the CCMA, and then the commissioner would then appropriately assist in terms of how the matter should have been dealt with, rather, because you also conciliate. In conciliating, we need a settlement agreement between the parties that seeks to more or less make both of them reasonably comfortable about the terms on which they agree to, because should it go to arbitration, then you're dealing with a winner and a loser, so to speak. So it's always better to rather settle your issue at conciliation level wherever you can. But sometimes it does happen that as the parties, you can agree on the proposals that are put before you. Then you may then proceed with your matter to the next level. But trying to reach an agreement is important, number one. Number two, when you're the domestic employer, engage your worker and sensitize them around this, because it's a reality.
Yes, yes.
It is a reality that we face.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So as far as assistance is concerned, on the dismissal issues, they can refer the matter to the CCMA, then the commissioner will assess as to whether there was indeed an unfair dismissal or not, because we still need to assess. You can't act purely based
on one
side of the story. Yeah.
Yes.
And then for the UIF, it's for the Department of Labor to go to the employer and deal with non-compliance issues. Because beyond employment, that worker would have to be paid their UIF.
I hope that has assisted our listener. Just one last question before I let you go, coming in from our lines. It says, my clarity-seeking question is, if an employer has been found guilty for unfair dismissal and fined to pay back all the monies owed to the employees, but portion of those employees didn't belong to the union, were excluded by the union because they were not members and never got their payout, what is the next step? Having tried CCMA and the matter was referred back to the department, the CCMA didn't entertain the matter and still the employees are still not paid their monies. It is now the second year.
Okay. Can I just get clarity, because there's quite a lot of details there. Which money did the employees not get?
This was unfair dismissal.
Okay.
So the money is for unfair dismissal, and the department in which they worked for was found guilty, if I can put it that way, and they were required to pay back the monies, right? But a portion of these employees, they were represented by a union.
Okay.
So the ones that were represented by a union, they were paid their monies, and the ones who did not belong to the union did not receive their payouts. What is then the next step?
Okay, that is an enforcement situation. Those workers that were not paid, either according to the settlement agreement, if there was a settlement agreement, or if they were not paid according to an arbitration award, they must go back to the relevant CCMA branch and apply for enforcement for payment of the monies that were ordered in the arbitration award.
Oh, That sounds simple. Go back to the office, apply for an enforcement, and get your money back. I mean, because for me, it only makes sense if a portion of the employees were paid back, then it meant that all of them were unfairly dismissed, right?
Especially where there was a decision confirming everything.
Yes.
And ordering payments for all of them.
Yeah.
The employer can treat them differently. The employer is supposed to comply with the whole of the award.
Wow, what a great way to end off this conversation. 21 minutes to 3 o'clock. Thank you so much, Ms. Mukwena, for your time. It's been a wonderful conversation. And thank you for the work that you are doing, you know, representing the people and, you know, just trying to find a right balance between employer and employee. We often, you know, put out the CCMA as the enemy of the employer, whereas we're trying to curb the unemployment rate, and we want everybody to have a good time and enjoy, you know, the work that they do and get what is due to them after they have worked. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great afternoon and an amazing week further.
Thank you, and to your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you so much. What a refreshing conversation to have, you know. It was a great conversation that we've just had with the Acting National Senior Commissioner from CCMA.